Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of The Wrap-Up, a production of The Balance. Join Tom and $2 Bill Josh as they wrap up the last 24 hours of sports for you. Right now, here's Tom and $2 Bill Josh.
I am Optimus Prime, and I send this message to any surviving Autobots taking refuge among the stars. We are here. We are waiting.
It's time to start.
All right, boys and girls, welcome back to the Balance Wrap-Up. It's been a long time, and we have heard your requests, and we are back. And right alongside me is $2 Bill Josh Elmore. Josh, it's so good to be back on the Wrap-Up. How you doing, my friend?
I'm well. How are you, Tom?
I am ready to rock and roll. Well, Josh, it's good to be back on the Wrap-Up. We had a little bit of a sabbatical, but we listened to our listeners and we put our heads together and we said, why not? Let's bring back this Wrap-Up. So, guys, every day right here, 6 o'clock Eastern, you're going to listen to the Balance Wrap-Up, and myself and $2 Bill Josh is going to just wrap up the last 24 hours of sports. And typically on Mondays, RJ Cunningham from Trackside Review, the magazine, will come on and break down the racing scene. Due to the fact of the magazine coming out, a lot of stuff going on his part, he's not going to be able to do that. So, Josh, we'll try to condense some racing stuff in toward the end of this half hour. So really what we've got is we've got a lot to cover in the last 24 hours. As usual, that's why we do this thing every day, 6 o'clock Eastern. There's always going to be something that happens in the last 24 hours that we're going to bring you up to speed on. And some of the things that we're going to touch on today is obviously tonight is that Home Run Derby, the MLB 2011, sizing up the American League hitters and the National League power hitters and going head-to-head and seeing who is the most powerful hitters in the league for 2011. Plus, looks like, knock on wood, that we're getting close to the beginning of the end of the NFL lockout, which is a very positive thing. And like I said at the very beginning of the half hour, we're going to do some talking about some racing and some things that happen over the weekend in racing. Well, Josh, it's good to have you back on board with the Wrap-Up. We've got the MLB All-Star Game tomorrow, I believe, and the Home Run Derby is tonight. The American League and the offense and the NL, too many L's, too many N's, too much excitement going on a Monday, and the National League power hitters. So, Josh, I tell you what, your Red Sox, your Mr. Ortiz is back in the lineup for the Home Run Derby. So what I'm going to let you do real quickly, I'm going to let you go ahead and break down the American League hitters, and I'll jump into the National League with Prince Fielder as well.
Well, tonight is the Home Run Derby, and for those who get into the Home Run Derby, it's an exciting night. It's a night of offensive power, you know, in the American League. You got Jose Bautista, who has 31 home runs already. You have David Ortiz, you have Adrian Gonzalez, and I can't remember who's rounding out the American League roster. I'm going to watch the Home Run Derby tonight, and not that I'm trying to kill the buzz. I'm a Red Sox fan. If I was Terry Francona, I would have forbid David Ortiz or Adrian Gonzalez from playing in the Home Run Derby as it's a night they potentially could have had off, and now they risk injury and not even really a game.
Well, and here's the thing. That's a very good point that you bring up. And obviously we talk about this every year when it comes to the Home Run Derby. Well, let's look at Albert Pujols, perfect example as to somebody. But I do believe that it is within their choice, and it's certainly not the manager's choice to say, hey, you're not going to play it. And I think that's where a lot of the things that we as fans, we got to realize that these guys are multi-million dollar employees. And it's very laid out very, very clearly the things that can happen if they do extracurricular activities. Now, granted, it is the All-Star Home Run Derby, but it's still considered an extracurricular activity. But management can't step up and say, hey, we forbid you from doing that. That's like giving them a curfew. These guys are grown adults, and, you know, but I do agree with you, Josh, to an extent there, that when you get out there and you break down the American League or the National League for that matter, the home run hitters, you know, the Red Sox have some pretty good hitters there. And speaking of hitters, I want to say you're Derek Jeter, but the American League's Derek Jeter, 3,000 hits. How about that? We'll go ahead and give him his props one more time here on the balance and the balance wrap up. Josh, how about Derek Jeter and 3,000 hits?
That's a very impressive accomplishment. Job well done. He's a surefire first ballot Hall of Famer. And I'm going to say, and I know Tom disagrees, the greatest Yankee of all time and the perfect Yankee.
I don't think there's anything such an animal or a beast out there as a perfect Yankee. Maybe Babe Ruth. I'll give him that's how far it's been since there's been, in my opinion, any worthwhile Yankees. But, no, I'm actually kidding. There's been a lot of good Yankees. I guess maybe you can call me a hater if you will. But I'm a Cardinal fan. I'm a National League guy. I really don't have to worry about the American League until this weekend and then again in October. So, really, whatever the American League wants to do with their hitters and their DH players and whoever they want to bring on staff to try to buy a World Series, so, which, by the way, didn't seem to work out so well for them here recently. But anyway, we don't want to get on to another tangent, if you will. But what we've got tonight is the Home Run Derby, Josh. And you talked a little bit about the American League and, of course, your guy, Mr. Ortiz. Now, let's break down how many home runs he's going to hit today.
That's really hard to tell because it's hard to project, you know, who's going to make the reach round, but I'm going to say you get six in the first round, whether or not that'll be good enough to make it
around. Josh, did you just say reach around on the Josh, my goodness, my brother, you just said reach around. And you know what I'm doing right now? I got to tweet this. Josh just said reach around. I'm just saying, brother. Anyway, go ahead.
I'm going to say he gets six in the first round, and we'll have to see if that's good enough to advance.
Well, I'm going to tell you he's not going to get that many in the first round. I'm just saying. I think he's only going to get four in the first round. So we'll see how that goes.
I believe there's three Red Sox playing in tonight's Home Run Derby. Two of them are the Red Sox, and one of them who's very quickly going to be a Red Sox. Maybe not at the trade deadline, maybe at the trade deadline, maybe in the off season.
Right. Well, one of the things that one of the players that most definitely need that recognition, Josh, is first baseman the Prince Fielder. He's fourth in baseball, 22 home runs, and the second in RBIs with 72. That's and it's just my opinion and nothing more, but I believe Fielder has passed Pujols, and you're not going to see this. Hear me say this very much. You guys want to sit back and snuggle up to somebody warm here, because I'm going to tell you, I'm not getting cold to Albert Pujols. I'm just saying that I believe that that Prince Fielder has passed Albert Pujols as the top first baseman in the league as we stand right now. Now, that does not mean that that's not going to change in the near future, but obviously purposes of conversation, Albert has not been contributing the way that he should be. So I'm not saying all time, but I think that Fielder's Home Run Derby and partner Milwaukee second baseman Richie, which has 17 home runs, 65 RBIs. Then you've got Colorado's shortstop Troy Tulowitz, which has 17 and 44, while the Phillies' third baseman Polanco. You know me in English. I have a hard time with English names, let alone foreign names, with four homers and 39 runs batted in. So for the most part, I think, Josh, and here's another thing I want to get your thoughts on the American League. I'm very happy of how the fans voted and getting the All-Star players. I think for the most part they did a great job with the All-Star voting this year, but struck out big time, I think, in Phillies Polanco's selection. Four homers, and 39 runs batted in. I'm not saying that that's not good, but is it all-star material? So, Josh, did the American League fans do what they were supposed to do and get the right players? And I know you're going to say Ortiz. Okay, we're going to give you that one. That is that's your mulligan. Who else do you think, or do you think, that the American League had in there, or did they do it right this time?
I think they got it right. To answer several of the other questions you asked, four home runs, there's a movie coming out in September. I'm going to take Tom, too. And it's the perfect example why I don't look at a home run when you decide if you're an all-star caliber. It's called Moneyball, and it's a brand of baseball. The Red Sox are kind of playing it a little bit. I think Polanco is a perfect all-star because more important than home runs, he gets on base. And you can't score runs if you don't get on base. But I think the All-Star game needs to be remade. I think Bob Kravitz of the Star got it right yesterday. I've heard several other people say it needs to be USA versus the world. There's plenty of countries represented in Major League Baseball. You could very well do USA versus the world. They play 162 games. Home field advantage in the World Series should be based on 162 games, not some meaningless All-Star game.
Meaningless All-Star game. And listeners, we're not taking any calls, but I want you to make a notation of this for Thursday or send us the hate emails. But make sure you send them to Josh when he said, because you heard Josh say just now that the All-Star game is without merit. Is that what you're saying, Josh?
It's just an exhibition game, and by no stretch of the imagination of any sane person should it determine home field advantage in the World Series.
Now that's a wholly different, totally different discussion than what you said. You said that the home run derby was without meaning. I think myself, in just combining the home run derby with it as an activity of the All-Star and the All-Star break is, I think that it gives players like Albert Pujols and other players who are struggling to get some extra healing time done. I think it gives the teams a break. It gives them some time to get refreshed, and at the same time, it gives us as fans to see these all-star players hit some good home runs. To get out there and just play a fun game of baseball. So many times throughout the year, we forget about the fun of baseball. You know, we've talked about it on the show, The Balance, before with the Dodgers. I mean, it's just not fun to play with the Dodgers anymore. It's not really fun to play with the Yankees anymore. It is fun to play with the Cardinals. It is fun to play with the Reds. It absolutely is fun to play with a team like Seattle. It absolutely is fun to play with the Rockies, and of course, you know, who can't forget the Atlanta Braves? And it's great playing for the Oakland A's because they aren't getting the notoriety. Now the Cardinals are, don't get me wrong, but it's good to see some of these guys come out and get things together. So, Josh, real quickly, and we've got to move on because the thing about it is we've only got 30 minutes in the wrap-up. So, guys, tonight is the Home Run Derby. We've got tomorrow, we've got the All-Star Game, National League, American League, and as Josh just pointed out, the whoever wins the All-Star Game gets home field advantage in the World Series. So, go National League. Josh, real quickly, give us some final thoughts on the Home Run Derby and the All-Star game tomorrow.
I'm looking for Adrian Gonzalez of the Red Sox to win the Home Run Derby tonight. Should be a great All-Star game. I do, however, have to disagree, Joey. Prince Fielder is not the best first baseman in the National League. I guess I'm still on a one-man bandwagon on The Balance. Joey Votto is the best first baseman, not only in the National League, but all of baseball. and that includes Albert Pujols, Adrian Gonzalez, Mark Teixeira. The best of them all is Joey Votto.
Now, we're not talking about all of all time. We're simply just talking about who is the best first baseman at the moment. And like I said, at the moment, I think – and then you can never tell me that he's a better first baseman than Albert Pujols. But that's fine. Now here's the thing. Here's some of the top names that I've got put together for the Home Run Derby on who I think will win the Home Run Derby. I obviously, and I think I gave my pick away. I think it's going to be Prince Hilder who's going to come away with that. Followed up right behind that, Matt Kemp. I think Ricky Weeks is right there. Matt Holliday is going to be right in the mix somewhere, and I'm really excited to see what he's going to be about. I think Ortiz is going to be behind those guys, like I kind of indicated earlier. And I think Adrian Gonzalez is going to be toward the bottom. And those are kind of where my thoughts are. But I certainly think that the Prince will come away as the winner of the 2011 All-Star Home Run Derby. Josh, real quickly, 30 seconds.
I'm going to pick Adrian Gonzalez, David Ortiz, and Prince Fielder in that order.
All right. You heard it from the man, $2 bill, Josh Elmore. He has Prince Fielder coming in second, Gonzalez coming in first, and Ortiz coming in third. Is that what you said?
Yep.
All right. We'll see what happens. All right, guys, we're going to move right along. Looks like we've got a deal that's in the making. Let's give a round of applause for July 21st, guys. I'm hearing it. I'm hearing it from Adam Scheffner. I'm hearing it from other sources. We could have a deal on the table, Josh, that's going to now this just came down this morning, that this deal could put an end to the national football lockout. Josh, have you had a chance to get any information on that today?
I've watched quite a bit of information. I'm getting mixed signals. Some of the owners are saying we are. Some of the players are going, whoa, hold on a minute. I'll believe that the lockout will be over on July 21st when they have breaking news on every sports channel to announce it's over. Until then, I don't buy it.
Right, and there's still work to be done. Like I said, it's the beginning, and it's certainly beginning to look as if there's a deal that's being worked out. They're saying timeline-wise on or around the 19th of July, and so that'll put them in the position to have this done somewhere around the 21st of July. It just puts us a couple weeks away. Now, Josh, it does not mean that the league just jumps back into business and everything's back to status quo. Like you just said, the players have to approve this deal, and like you said, they're not completely on board with this. They're listening. They're attentive. They are at least looking at the options very, very thoroughly. Now, nevertheless, once they sign off on it, that's when all the frenzy of activity that you're talking about is going to happen and when the camps start opening up. And we're right there at it, guys. Camp's going to be – we're going to get this signed, and we're going to get camps opened up the very next week, you know, and then we've got to get all these free agents signed. We've got to get trades proposed, and we've got to get the preseason launched. So I'm excited. I think it's great for football fans, and I think it's great for fans of the balance. One, because, hey, Josh, we get to have fantasy football huddle again. Woohoo! That's right, boys, rocking and rolling. Well, girls, too. You're certainly more than welcome to join the Balance Fantasy team, and we're going to have a draft night. We're going to have a good time. We do that every year out at BW3s in Speedway, Indiana. More than welcome for you guys to come on out, join us, jump on the draft board, and we have a great team. So a great time in fantasy football. So myself, I'm getting a little stoked. I'm a little cautiously optimistic, but one thing I will tell you, I feel a lot better about the NFL lockout than I do the NBA lockout, but that's a different day, a different time, a different wrap-up. Now, so I think some of the complications we've got to look at is, what about the Hall of Fame game, Josh? Where does that come into play? Does that just go away this year? Or will it be between, you know, I've heard that it's going to be between Chicago and St. Louis. I mean, the game between Chicago and St. Louis, I'm hearing that that's going to be canceled. What have you heard on that, Josh, on the Hall of Fame game?
It does sound like it's going to be canceled, and that's okay. I not a big preseason football type of guy. I believe that'll be the only preseason game canceled if they get the deal done by July 21st. But there's a whole lot of ifs before that gets done.
Okay. What are some of the big ifs other than the players signing off on it? What do you think some of the big complications that the players are going to have on not signing off on it, Josh?
I think it's going to depend on the rookie wage scale. We don't really have time to get into it today. I do think it needs to be done. Sam Bradford's a great quarterback. He'll be a great quarterback, but there's no way he should be making more per year than Peyton Manning. That's ridiculous, and that needs to be in the new collective bargaining agreement, regardless of how long it extends it out.
Okay. So I understand what you're saying, Josh, and I'm with you. I don't necessarily agree with you, but what I do want you to do is understand that we have a lot of listeners that are just kind of really starting to understand this and put this together. So if you could kind of dumb down what you just said a little bit better for our listeners, not our dumb listeners, actually our listeners. No, I just want you to just kind of break down a little bit further on what you were saying in more of a layman's term, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Last year when Sam Bradford was drafted first overall, he just signed something like a 5-year, $60 million deal, which pays him $15 million a year. And after Peyton Manning was making like $15 or $16 million a year. And everybody in America has heard of Peyton Manning. He's a 4-time MVP. He's a Super Bowl champion. He's led the Colts to the playoffs up like 9 or 10 straight years. That's how long it is. I can't exactly remember how many years it's been.
Mm-hmm.
And Sam Bradford hadn't done anything yet, and he's already on the pay scale of one of the greatest, if not the greatest, quarterbacks of all time.
Right. And, well, okay, so what you're saying is that if you're Sam Bradford, you shouldn't make money that's equal to Peyton Manning, even if a team's willing to pay you that.
Yeah, it's like when me or you get a job, we don't walk in and make as much as the CEO of the company on our first day.
Well, you may not. No, I'm just kidding. Kidding. I think you're right about that. Okay. Well, here's the thing. But do you think that's going to actually be something to keep the players from signing off on that? I mean, how much of a reality is that actually going to happen on a large scale? Are you just talking about the bar being set?
Adam Schechter and Chris Mortensen and Michael Lombardi have said the rookie wage scale is the only thing keeping a deal from being signed. Everything else is done, agreed to, done. That is the only issue on the table that has kept a deal from being done today. So whenever they can get that worked out.
Okay, and here's the thing. I guess maybe you're hearing something I'm not hearing. I didn't hear that that's the only thing that they're agreeing on. I do know that this date has been very, very critical to the owners and to the players, for that matter. And this is a last-minute chance to see where they stand so they can get the preseason camps underway. I think, believe it or not, I think that that's something both the owners and the players want to do. And that's why they call it a collective bargaining agreement. Collectively, both sides are bargaining. And maybe the owners, maybe the players lose the rookie deal, the rookie contract situation. That does not mean that that's a lifetime thing. That's just for this particular agreement. Maybe they've got to give a little and take a little. And I think both sides are starting to show signs as to where they're ready to get this preseason underway. And I just several people are talking about today about having a lot of optimism about the deal that could be reached within the next 8 days. So the head coaches are something else we've got to think about and look about at, and they're ready to get things going, so they're going to be putting some pressure on it. And I think the NFL players really, truly want to save the season for themselves, most definitely for the fans. No matter what you hear, I think the players are in this for the fans. I think the owners are in it for the money and for the players, as well as the fans. I don't know that the fans take the highest pecking order in the owner's mind. But in the end, I think we do have a deal that is going to stop some shortages. And the most important part is we're not going to have a strike like we did in 1982 and 1987, and where the regular season games were lost and they shouldn't have been, and all kinds of stuff of records and achievements. I don't think that that's a level that the players and the owners want to go through. So I think we're going to get a deal signed. Real quickly, Josh, real quickly, we've got about 30 seconds, and we got to jump into some racing information. Real quickly, what are your thoughts on the NFL lockout?
I'm hoping to get a deal done July 21st. There's some reports going around yesterday that 60 days from yesterday, which would be September 10th, if there's not a deal done by September 10th, the 2011 season will be declared over.
Okay. Well, that's we'll see what happens. And guys, you can be assured of one thing, that when it does happen, myself and $2 Bill Josh and the balance will be right here ready for you to give you all the information. Well, guys, we're going to jump on over here to racing. We will always touch on racing a little bit, but every Monday, RJ Cunningham from Trackside Review will jump right in here at 6:30 Eastern and really talk to you about what has happened in racing. We'll spend 30 minutes just talking about racing, what has happened in racing, and what's going to happen on this week, and some of the things that they're going to be covering. But it was a crash-filled, crash-up derby race in the streets of Toronto yesterday up in Canada. And one of the things I want to break down is the Indy Lights race. I was really disappointed with that race, Josh. And our good friend David Ostella, I had a chance to talk with him via text after his accident there. And I think that he was a very disappointing day for him, especially for him to be there in his hometown. It was just one crash after another, and it just started there with David, and of course it ended throughout the day with Hinchcliffe, and a lot of people were right up there in the top 10 in the IndyCar race. It was a crash-filled race, and in the end, Franchitti did end up winning that race, and that's his second race here in the most recent time that he's won. And I think that there was a lot of stuff that was going on there. Josh, real quickly, your thoughts on Toronto yesterday?
It was a really disappointing day for David Ostella. I watched the Indy Lights race. Actually, I'm getting to the point I prefer Indy Lights over IndyCar, except on the ovals. He just made a simple rookie mistake. He tried to force the car where it wasn't going to go, and he just touched tires with another driver. It was good to see Andretti Autosport finish 1-2 in the Indy Lights race. As far as the actual IndyCar race goes, it's good to see some guys getting anger, some rivalries being built. That's how you're going to take it to the next level. Randy Bernard's also recognizing the...
Go ahead.
But he's also recognizing he needs to let these guys go after it a little bit instead of being such a clean sport. People want to see rivals. They want somebody they can cheer against.
True. Well, here's what I am seeing. Yes, we want some rivalries. Yes, we want some people to cheer against some stuff. But here's what I saw. That Chip Ganassi team is having a hard time getting along, and they were having a hard time getting things together. Our good friend Kirk Cavan has been on the show here with us as well, and on the balance as well, agrees with this, and you can read his article there in the Indianapolis Star. Guys, we are running out of time. We've got about 90 seconds left, so we want to make sure that we do go ahead and run over to NASCAR. And, what's coming up next is in the Sprint Cup race is – my computer screen is not coming up like it should be. I'm sorry. In New Hampshire, I believe, is the next race up there in NASCAR. Obviously, one of the Busch brothers won on Saturday, and I'm sorry we're running out of time. Real quickly, Josh, just give us a real quick wrap-up. You got about 30 seconds to wrap up the last 24 hours in sports. I'm going to give you the last 30-second timeout. Go.
Tonight's the Home Run Derby. Tomorrow night's the All-Star Game. And this weekend, NASCAR returns to New Hampshire on the 10th year anniversary of Adam Pettit dying, trying to qualify for what was then a Busch Series race.
All right, guys. Well, that's going to do it for us today. My name is Tom Marquis. Right alongside me is $2 Bill, the man, Josh Elmore. We're going to be back here tomorrow at 6 o'clock Eastern, and we're going to break down everything that happens. And keep in mind, also, you guys can follow everything online, www.thebalanceonline.com, on Twitter, GBalance. We'll see you tomorrow at 6 o'clock Eastern.